And welcome back to Fritz and Friends, 1320 WILS and 1320 WILS live streaming. Scott Eckersley and myself, Cheryl Fritz, here with you. This is going to be a fun one. Going out to an old friend of mine, Greg Hess, who happens to be a 767 international captain with American Airlines. Good evening, Greg.
Hi, Cheryl. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. I just love the fact that I have some interesting friends, I think. And what had you come to mind is a flight I took over New Year's Eve a few years ago, going to Hawaii and going through several time zones and having a Happy New Year toast each time I went through a time zone. I was kind of enjoying that. So I thought of you when I needed to talk to a pilot or wanted to. But let's start back with how you got into flying to begin with. When did you first fly?
Oh, gosh. I was licensed when we were in high school, Cheryl. I was 17, our senior year, and it's just something I always wanted to do. I don't think I ever told you this, but we moved from England to the United States when I was 4, and we flew across the ocean in an old, must have been an Electra, a four-engine prop plane coming over the Atlantic. And back then, of course, all the security rules that they have now were not in place. As a 4-year-old, I was running up and down the aisle and sat in the cockpit for most of the trip, and made friends with the pilots and the navigator. They even had a navigator then, and a flight engineer. And that flight stuck with me through my childhood and into my teens. And when we were in high school, I decided that's what I want to do and went and got my pilot's license.
Now, see, that's the difference between you and me, Greg. If I were in a prop plane flying over the Atlantic, that might have had me never take a flight again rather than having me get hooked.
Well, I didn't know much then as a 4-year-old. I was fearless.
I would say so. Okay, so you got your pilot's license then in high school.
Yes, our senior year, went and got my license. I went up to Jackson, I believe it's still there, Mall Field in Napoleon.
Mm-hmm.
Cost me about $800 to learn how to fly in an old tail dragger. And I think it's about $4,000 to get your license now, a private license. And that was $800 in 1975.
Oh, now, see, don't go talking about years. That tells on both of us. Be very careful. After that, you followed with Hillsdale College and then the military.
You were an underclassmate of mine, so you were much younger than I am, Cheryl.
That's why you're my favorite pilot. Okay, then comes the military after Hillsdale College.
Yeah, I didn't have much money, and I joined the Army. I got the GI Bill out of it. I also got to see Korea for a couple years, and which was a great adventure for me, actually. Nobody was shooting at me, so the guys that were there before me took care of that. So I had a good couple years in Korea and continued to fly on my own, paying for it. And I was a mechanic for them, so I got an aircraft mechanics license with that. And then when I got out of the Army, then I had the GI Bill that helped me, it paved the way for college and allowed me to, once I had my degree, become an officer in the Air Force, and they sent me to the greatest pilot training in the world, U.S. Air Force. So after the stint in the Air Force and again traveling internationally all over with them and really seeing a lot more than the average person gets to see, I got hired by American Airlines and have been there for 25 years now.
Now, Miami is home to you. Is that correct?
Yeah, Fort Lauderdale, actually, now.
Oh, okay.
Miami is my home base.
Oh, okay, so you fly in and out of there.
Yeah, I fly in and out of Miami. I drive down or take the train from Fort Lauderdale down to Miami. I told you yesterday, earlier when we talked, I told you I was in Haiti. I left for Haiti yesterday morning, took the train down to Miami, flew into Port-au-Prince, which things are quite a mess there, I'm sure you know.
Mm-hmm.
And came back from Haiti yesterday afternoon, hop on the train, and here I am back in Fort Lauderdale.
Now, that leads me directly into your route that you take. What is the route that you have, and did you pick this route, or how does that work?
It's a very common question and a very complicated answer. People are always asking us, well, what's your route? And we kind of joke, if we want to hold the conversation, we'll tell them some interesting places. But if we kind of want to move on, we'll just tell them my route is Cleveland and that's it. And it changes a lot. I'm more an area than a route. Everything from I go south to all the islands in the Caribbean, Central America, and South America. And they change. Like I told you, Haiti, I was there once this month. The rest of the month I went to the Dominican Republic, and I had one trip down to Brazil. Prefer shorter ones. I like to come home at night after all the years of doing this, but we do have trips that go out for 4 or 5 days and longer layovers and further destinations.
The whole layover idea is interesting as well. You say you like to come home at night, and because of the route you're flying, oftentimes you get to do that. How are you required to lay over so long on certain flights?
Yes, there's a real complicated list of rules for crew rest and vault with and if we're in the air for over 8 hours, then we require an extra pilot, so we actually take a break. If you happen to be on one of our flights, you will see one by one each pilot coming out and taking a break, and it's just standard international flight rules that we're not allowed to sit, and you would not want your pilot to sit behind the wheel there, especially on an all-night flight for over 8 hours. It gets quite tedious. So
certainly. Then, now, what about the number of countries you've been to? I can imagine if you started a map when you started flying and putting push pins in, that's pretty crowded at this point.
I used to do that, actually.
You did.
In my moves, I do not have the map anymore, but I have kept a tallied list of them, and I'm up to 65 countries. So I've done quite a bit of traveling.
You have to love the travel part of it in order to do this for all these years.
Oh, I really do. I do. Some people don't like to travel, and this would not be the job for them.
Absolutely. What about training and updated training to keep the pilots sharp?
Well, things are changing all the time with technology, and as we personally move from airplane to airplane, each one, it's not like a car where you can jump in and take a look around for where the switches are and off you go. There's very intense training for each different jet we fly, and as the regulations change and the technology changes, we have to keep current of that. So there's a minimum of once, in some instances twice a year, that we visit our headquarters for American Airlines. That's Dallas-Fort Worth area, and we have classroom study and intense simulator training. And the simulators are nice for all the emergency training we can get.
Certainly.
For things that we could not do in the actual airplane, any type of engine failures or fires or any kind of problem that you might encounter in a real airplane, they duplicate in the simulator to very realistic results that we have to keep doing that every year. Yes.
Do you have any short stories, interesting or memorable flights? You have to.
Oh, I've got plenty. I mean, I have a favorite that goes way back when I first became a pilot with American, and I was a very junior pilot flying from Chicago out to Las Vegas, and we operate in seniority, and since I was junior, I got the less desired trips, and this one left Chicago, got out to Vegas about midnight, hung around there for an hour, and left there 1 in the morning and flew back to Chicago. And there's two different crowds. One group on the way out are pretty much in the party mode and excited for their journey. The other group we pick up is pretty much partied out and just wants to sleep on the way back to Chicago. And about 4 in the morning, I get a call from the flight attendants that a passenger in first class has urinated over the passengers in coach. And the captain and I just take a look at each other like, what the heck? What are we supposed to do with this? So I get in the book, and certainly there is a rule that falls under of lewd behavior, and we're required to have the authorities awaiting for this gentleman. And it turns out what had happened is that the poor guy had just been so sound asleep. He got up, and he was a sleepwalker, and he's in a darkened warm environment. They turn the lights down low for everyone to be able to sleep.
Sure.
He stands up, and there's a curtain that separates first class and coach. And he opened the curtain, not seeing that there's 100 people there looking at him, and he just unzipped and urinated right there on the front row of passengers and went back to his seat and back to sleep. He was shocked when the police were waiting for him, and he was told what he had done. He had no idea he had done that completely in his sleep. But I'd say that was one of my more bizarre episodes.
I will have to. My daughter's flying back from Vegas today. I'll have to call her and tell her to be careful that she doesn't fall asleep on the plane. Well, Greg, I appreciate so much spending some time with you today. Safe travels to you, and Happy New Year to you as well.
Thank you so much, y'all. I will have one.
Thank you so much. We've been speaking with Greg Hesse, 767 International Captain with American Airlines. We'll be back with more Fritz and Friends in just a bit.